Welcome to the Hard Water Fishing Show. Jeff and Jason talk tactics, gear, and ice fishing legends.
Welcome to the Hardwater Fishing Show, Season 4, Episode 8. It is the first week of January, 2021. And tonight, Jay, we're going to be talking about fishing rods.
I'm super excited to be talking about that. And we actually got somebody coming on the show to talk with us about that that knows more than we do, which doesn't take a lot, but he knows way more than we do.
Way more than we do. That's absolutely true. So that'll be a great interview. I'm excited about it. And we'll be talking about that later. So Jay, are you getting thirsty?
I am. Yes, sir.
All right. Well, what do you got tonight? What are you drinking?
I have Blonde Fat Ale.
Oh.
From Peace Tree Brewing Company. Our Belgian-style blonde ale will steal your heart as the unfiltered golden hue seduces your taste buds with surprising smoothness. It's delicately hopped, oh crap, with Styrian, Golding, and they had me and now they're losing me. I don't even know what that word is. For medium aroma with a crisp and refreshing bite. The Belgian yeast adds hints of fruity complexity, but be warned that its mysterious charm will draw you in again and again. Do I need to ask my wife permission to drink this? I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, you might have to.
I know. I'm going to open it up. There we go. All right, let's see how this tastes. That's not bad. I like it.
I see that it's the short little, like, keg bottle.
It is.
What do you call those things? It's like a little keg bottle.
Yeah, it's kind of like a Red Stripe bottle size.
Yeah.
But you know what? It was on clearance at the gas station for $4 for a six pack.
Wow.
It's cheaper than pop almost. So what the heck?
I'd buy that.
It's good. Good beer. I actually give this a thumbs up.
Awesome. Well, I also have a bottle tonight. Two bottles tonight. So I am drinking Stone IPA. And the most interesting thing about this is the label is upside down. So I have to hold the beer upside down to read the label upside right. I don't know if that's on purpose or not. It says it's the iconic West Coast style IPA. So there's a story. So it must be a good beer, right? You notice like Coors Light doesn't come with a story, Jay.
I bet they have a... Yeah, it comes from the mountains.
Right, but you just read me a paragraph, and I'm going to read you a paragraph about these beers. And Coors Light just comes from the mountains, or the Silver Bullet. But so let's talk about Stone IPA. It says, we covered our Escondido brewery with solar panels. We use local, small, farm, organic produce in our bistros. We employ landscaping goats.
Do they wear suspenders?
Landscaping goats. Perhaps this sounds like a brag, but we genuinely just want to let you know we give a damn.
It's a weird flex.
I like it, though. I like it. All right, let's see how it I got to open it up. And I have my from-the-drawer beer opener, like the... There we go. Oh, you didn't even hear it.
So, I heard it. Yeah, we got it.
Quiet. Pretty quiet.
Mm. How is it?
It is hoppy, which means you wouldn't like it.
I would not. I need to get up there and visit you. I have like a whole bunch of beer to give you.
Well, I kind of have a fridge full of those.
Because I buy those six packs. I drink one and it's just terrible.
But you know, some of the really hoppy ones, I enjoy them, but you enjoy one or two, right? Like it's not a sessionable beer as they would call it. So
yeah, I don't even know, like, you know, back in the day when, and I'm not saying I ever did this, but when people consume, you know, like you pound your way through like a case of beer in a couple of days or in a day.
Sure.
You could not do that with that hoppy stuff. I think it'd kill you.
I think you're right. Yeah, it's not made for that.
No.
It's for the connoisseur.
It's like you should never drink a whole bottle of wine.
Yes.
Yeah, right, exactly. Because that hurts.
It does. It does. All right. Well, we've got our beverages open. Our thirst is quenched. We need to move on to show business, Jay. So we talked a little bit more about this. So it's patron, not patron, and not Patreon. So we actually use a platform called Podbean to host all of our podcasts. And one of the features on there is they manage our patrons, which we really, really appreciate because they help us pay for our show. And so it is called Patreon. There is a website called Patreon that many people who create content use to get funding for their programs. But that's actually not what we're using. We're using Patreon, which is part of Podbean, which hosts our website and hosts our podcast and that kind of stuff. So not to get too far into that, but you know, it does work pretty well, and it lets us create our content without a bunch of friction and overhead. It just kind of works. So that's the difference, right, Jay?
Yeah, thanks for explaining that. Actually, as we were, Ian had asked us that question because he was looking for that. And he actually, while we're sitting here talking, he just messaged me about that again. So,
Wow. It's like almost like a live show.
I know it is. Or is he listening? Are these things on? These mics on? No. So we really appreciate when people donate to the show because, I mean, it's nice. It's weird to me a little at some level that people do that, but I think it's really cool that they do. So.
Yeah, and it does help us, you know. I mean, there's costs to like hosting the site, you know. We use like Zoom for our interviews, and there's some cost to the show. It's not overly expensive, but it does help. If you know we don't have patrons, then Jason and I just pay for it. So, yep. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Well, you can find if you want to support the show and get a T-shirt, you can find our gear. There's a link on our webpage to our merch. There's T-shirts, sweatshirts, socks, which I have a pair now, a mug. I don't know. You had a phone case, Jason.
Yep, I did. I had a Samsung phone case. I have the coffee mug off of there. It actually works pretty well.
Yeah. So you can check out our gear there. You can find us on social media on Instagram and Facebook. Those are great places to interact with us. We read the messages, and we love seeing the pictures and the posts and that kind of stuff.
Yep, really appreciate it.
Yeah, really appreciate it again. You can find our website, hardwatershow.com, and that has all of our episodes and the thing, you know, links to our merch. You can also find us on YouTube, which Jason has been to now.
By accident. I didn't mean to.
Yeah, he went there in accident, but we do post our videos of each episode on there, and then some other videos from time to time also. And you can email us at hardwatershow@gmail.com, and we will read that. And we read everything, so we like to get back to everybody. So that's show business, Jay.
And we really appreciate when you send us fish pictures. Eventually, most of those I'll end up getting up on Instagram or on Facebook as time goes. Sometimes it's not for a month, but just so you know that, because I do try to modulate the frequency with which I put stuff on Instagram. So
modulate. That's a
you
good
like
word.
That modulate.
I
like it.
Yeah, I know. I was surprised you had problems on your beer with those big words, because usually you're into those big $5
that's
words.
That's not even. That's a plant name or something. I don't know what that is.
It's like Latin.
Latin or Belgium-ish name. I don't know.
Does that have it's Ignis and
Ignoranus? You know,
yeah. Is that what you're calling it?
I don't know. You're gonna have to delete that part.
I don't know. I think that sounds a little Latin word, right?
Isn't I don't know Latin. My little brother took Latin. He knew Latin. I don't know why.
All right. Moving on to gear. Gear. I skipped listener comments. Wow, I just skipped right over listener news, so concurrent events. So let's do listener news and current events first. So Ryan G. sent us an email at the very end of December, like the 28th, before the new year. And he said they are still waiting on ice in Erie, Pennsylvania, although I think they have ice now because we talked to somebody in Pennsylvania coming up, and they have ice.
Yes, Erie would be up on Isn't that up on the lake?
I think so.
So he might be waiting, you know, with the lake effect, he might. Pennsylvania is such a big stinking state.
Well, it's funny you said that, because I was asking my brother, because he knew his wife is from Pennsylvania, and I said, oh, maybe you guys are from the same place. He's like, oh, that's a big state, Jeff. I'm like, oh.
It's not like Iowa, where, you know, eventually after 10 minutes of conversation, you can narrow it down that somebody they knew lived next door.
It's true.
If you ask enough questions, you can get down. Oh, your cousin's husband's dog's hairdresser's breeder.
Yes, that's for sure. All right, so we appreciate that email from Ryan G. Noah B. sent in a really nice picture of great Colorado lake trout. I really love all these lake trout pictures we get from, like, kind of the, is that the West? I mean,
I would call it the West. Utah, Wyoming,
Colorado. Now, we did get a trout picture from Dave in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Now, that's not exactly the West. That's probably the Midwest. But
Wisconsin. But nice, beautiful color on that. And those eventually will find their, those pictures are some of the examples that will eventually find their way up on Instagram.
Yep. And I got to mention one other one, Kenzie. I was talking to her recently, and she had some lake trout from Wyoming that they caught in the mountains.
Wow.
It's pretty cool. So they went up there in a bucket and just drilled a hole and caught some lake trout.
That's crazy. We need to go on a trip. I don't know when.
I really do think that is not something we've done. It is very different, and it's just a long drive, but we could do it. So yeah, I think that's a trip we
need to do. It's not going to happen this year, but some year.
Not this year, but I think it is. It needs to go on the list, Jay.
It's on the list. I would say it's definitely on the list.
For sure.
When we retire, we'll drive around on ice fish. Oh,
we got to do it before then. Got to do it before then.
Okay, when our kids get out of the house.
Yeah, that's not very long for you, so.
No, we're on the downhill slide on that deal, so that is good.
I have a little longer plan when it comes to that. But still, we can plan for when your kids get out of the house, and then that's just a couple years.
That sounds good. That makes sense to me.
All right. We can have a graduation present for your kid. And we're going to go
ice center to Colorado ice fishing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we could do that. I like it. I like the way you think.
Moving on to gear. So gear, I got, so for Christmas, my mom got me a Cabela's gift card, which was really nice.
Smart mom.
I know, exactly. And she listens. So thanks, Mom. I didn't really have anything in mind, so it was kind of fun. You get a gift card. You get to kind of just go to Cabela's, and I ended up coming home with a Frabel Magnum bait station. It's pretty cool. It's like 13 quarts.
Okay.
So I looked at the Frabel, and then I looked at the one you have, which is the...
I have the Engel.
The Engel. So those are the two. So that I kind of went... It's a little bigger than the Engel, and it's a little heavier, but... It just seemed a little more sturdy, I guess. I don't know if it is or not, but it's just a little bigger. So it seemed kind of cool. So that's what I came home with. So it's got a built-in bubbler in the top that I'm sure, like the angle, so I hear, is that'll last about 10 minutes. And
yeah.
And we're out. I don't know if you've had that experience.
No, mine's yet, still going strong.
Okay.
The only thing I don't like about mine, but I bought it over the Magnum because it wasn't integral, but now I kind of dislike that, as it hangs on the side.
Yes.
Well, then you bump it on stuff and it constantly is going flying on me.
Yeah. I used it for the first time. I was worried about the size, right? It's pretty big and kind of heavy. And I got the smaller one. It's a 13 quart. They have a 19 quart.
That's huge.
And then they have another one that's like, I don't know how big it is. We'll just call it the giant one. Like, it's like, mm-hmm. Like a bait well or something. I don't know. It's huge. But I used it for the first time last weekend, and I was out Mille Lacs, and so I was running just my portable flip over, the super small one.
Yeah.
Because it was just me, and it worked really well. But it fit in there just nice. And the nice thing was, like, I had bait. I actually went out fishing, not to get too far ahead, but I went out fishing twice last weekend. So I bought bait for the first trip. And even without a bubbler, it kept them nice and happy for the whole weekend. So mm-hmm. I fished all weekend with them. So it worked out great. And it wasn't too big. I mean, I wouldn't mind something smaller, but I've used those little bait ups. Remember, we've talked about the bait ups before, and that's okay, but like for more than a few hours, it really doesn't work very well, right? Because it's just not big enough. And I had some sucker minnows. Sucker minnows don't really fit in a bait up very well. I mean, they're like as big as the bait up, right? I mean, bait up works great for crappie minnows, and I love that it's super portable, but I really like this new Frable bait station, and it doesn't leak. Like, it locks down, so I can put it in my car.
That's what the angle does.
Not making a huge mess, so I think that was pretty key. I did buy one accessory for it. I ordered a AC adapter so I can plug the bubbler into the wall. So that was like another $12. And it was about $70.
Okay.
Which was not super cheap.
No. So the angle I have is a 7-quart version, the smallest one.
Yep.
And I have not, now that you mentioned sucker minnows, and I have not had big sucker minnows in it. I got bait on New Year's Eve and had bait yet alive yet on Sunday then, I wasn't catching a lot of fish on minnows, so I didn't go through many. So in that little one I had probably a couple of dozen crappie minnows and a couple dozen fatheads. And I had some floaters, but for the most part, it kept them alive too. So, but I didn't have real big minnows in there.
You had the bubbler going or not going?
You know, I ran it intermittently. I did not have it running overnight. People I've talked to, and my plan for this would be to get the Engle also has an AC adapter option, but the pumps are so unreliable.
Yeah.
From reading and talking to people,
that
I think. You know, even though you've already ordered that because you didn't consult with me first about what you should do. So that's your own deal. But a lot of people, what they'll do for at their house or in their shack where they have maybe power is they get an aquarium bubbler.
Oh, sure.
They're a lot quieter. It's a little aquarium pump.
Yep.
Kind of the same price, and they just plug into 120.
And it seems like, at least from my experience last weekend, with that 13-quart, I had a scoop of crappie minnows, a scoop of fatheads, and about a dozen, well, the number went down over the weekend, sucker minnows, right? Mm-hmm. And it seemed like plenty, and I really love that net, because then, you know, it has a net, so you just lift up the net while the minnows come out.
You'll
so
love you and hate that net.
Hey, really?
Yeah, because it gets skunky.
Ooh.
Yeah, you got to wash it.
Good point.
Yeah, it gets. I haven't decided whether to keep mine in there and keep futzing with it or if I should just throw it as far as I can.
Oh, well, I because liked it for the first weekend.
So you dump your water out, right?
Yeah.
And then you got to leave the top open so it dries.
Yep.
Because if you shut it. But then even after that, if you shut it, that net, you know, it's got some funk to it. So then you have to take it out and you put it in the dishwasher and then your wife gets mad. You know, but like, well, what do you want me to do with this thing? You want me to put it in the laundry? So, you know, there's that.
I would like to have a quick moment here. My wife does listen to the show. I have not put our bait container in the dishwasher or in the washing machine.
You're the one that suggested it.
What? What? No. No, no, no. So yeah, I don't know. I'm excited about it. It seems really good. I don't know if I need the bubbler all the time. I think for a weekend you don't even need the bubbler. I think for long extended durations you maybe need to, but over 5 days I had just a couple floaters, so
if they stay cool, they don't need it. The oxygen doesn't seem to dissipate as much. And when I used mine in the summer, I had run that bubbler pretty much all the time. But what I did with my little one in the summer is I kept, like when we were at a cabin, I kept the bait in a pail down at the dock, like in a 5-gallon pail with holes in it, you know, and then you'd put a rock in it and throw it off the dock. And then I would just put in what I needed for the day into that little bucket instead of carrying them all around with me all the time.
Yeah, and that was one other thing. It is a dual purpose, right? I mean, I bought it for ice fishing, but it'll work for the boat too, right?
Yeah, you'll like that. Yeah. All right, cool.
So you wanted to talk about, Jason, how to fix your bent fishing rod guides.
Well, not guides. No.
I'm wrong is what you're saying.
You're kind of wrong about what you wrote, but that's okay. So I have.
Thanks for validating me.
Yeah, always, man. I got you. So I have two St. Croix rods, fishing rods, that I got a couple of years ago. The Mojo or whatever they are brand type rod. I think they're 50, okay. 60 bucks rods.
Yep.
And I've had this happen twice now. The first time I contacted St. Croix, and they replaced one of them.
That was nice.
Or fixed it, service. Whatever. Yeah, it was okay. Good. They had a year warranty on them. So what happens is over the summer, if I forget to take the line off and just, you know, the last time you use them, they're hooked up. They got a little bend to them. Throw them in the garage. You come back in the fall or in the winter and you take the rod out and that bend stays. And what these did is they actually twisted a little bit. So the rod guides were no longer aligned to the handle. They all had, the whole rod had a little bend and a twist. And well, so the first time it happened, I sent them back and they sent me new ones. When it happened again, and I'm like, okay, this must be pretty common. And so I thought to myself, and I thought some more how to fix it, because I didn't want to throw them away because they're not cheap rods.
Yep.
And so I got out my heat gun. I have a Black & Decker heat gun, nothing real expensive. And I took that heat gun and I started gently adding heat to the end of that rod. And then as I did that, I just, when it got a little bit pliable, and not the guides themselves, but actually the rod itself, I just was able to twist gently that rod back into shape, nice and straight and nice and even with all the rod guides lined up. And then it stayed and it's working fine.
Cool.
Right. So well, I just wanted to share that because I, you know, if that happens to somebody else, you know, if you don't think about that and you throw the rod away or think it's busted. Now, the other thing you could do, I got to thinking about this, is if your buddy's got a rod and it's all bent up, you're like, well, I'll use it. I'll give you a buck for it or something. And then you could take it home, you could fix it, and you'd be in good shape.
Jason's going to be in Ole Shack.
I know.
Be like twisting on those things.
I know. Going, I'm gonna pull out the heat gun.
That one's not good anymore.
When he's in the when he's gone, I'm gonna be taking the heat gun to his rods and twisting them all up. You're like, I'll take that off your hands, Ole.
Yeah, I know some of his rods are pretty high quality, so you might be have to drag those out.
And
of
I don't
his
know
hands.
If that's specific to whatever that rod, the way they made that rod, or if there's other rods that have that problem, but. I know it's happened to me twice, but I've been able to fix it, so it's not a huge deal. I would just be gentle when you add that heat, so you don't melt the guides or you know the wrap on the guides or anything.
Otherwise, you just get a shorter rod.
Yeah, I think then you'd be over the hill with them.
So I've been fighting with bobber stops lately. So when I get into the fishing report, I've been using lots of bobber stops, and I put this on your help me understand. So I've been listening to this YouTube channel of Vice Grip Garage. He's this guy from Minnesota that fixes cars and he's pretty funny. So whenever he gets frustrated with something, he just says, help me understand. So and I have a help me understand moment with these bobber stops. And so I had those plastic ones that like you clip on and I was using those and I was frustrated because they were getting, my line was getting stuck on them. And then, so then I went back to the kind of traditional bobber stops that are made out of string, right? They're yellow or green, just kind of no. And those are okay, but my line was getting stuck on those too because, you know, you're fishing outside, it's cold, the little ends get tied up in there. So I'm kind of asking for help on here is, you know, what other ways do our listeners use bobber stops that have been more effective or easier to deal with? Because I think I'm looking for a better bobber stop at this point.
And you're talking the yellow float type bobbers.
Yes, exactly. For those ice buster bobbers, ice buster, those kind of bobbers.
So I picked up at the show those little red ones. They're little red, like little red pieces of plastic.
Yes, that's the, I have those.
Those don't work.
Yeah, I had some of those too. Yeah, I know. I had some of those too. They actually worked okay. They were super hard to get on, and then my line would get stuck in it.
Yeah, like, yeah, they don't work real well either. I don't know. I guess I don't have a good solution to that either.
So I bought some at Cabela's, and they're too thick. Like, they didn't have the right thing. it's like they're made for bigger line or something. So I need to get new ones that are thinner, cause, you know, like smaller.
Like gauge. A bobber stop for 2 pound test.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. Cause this stuff's like for a 10 pound test and that's not what I need.
Yeah.
So I don't have an answer for this, but I'm looking for ideas from our listeners of what other kind of bobber stops do they use, like for a slip bobber style fishing.
So how do we want them to answer this question, Jeff?
Well, I mean, they can send us an email with a picture. They can send us something on Facebook, however they want to communicate with us. Okay. But I'd love to see something different. You can write me a letter and send it in the mail, although I don't know how you do that because we don't have our address out there. So. I might be scared if somebody shows up at my doorstep unannounced and hands me bobber stops.
That'd be funny. I think people should do that. Anyway.
All right. So fishing report. Jay, why don't you talk about your fishing this weekend or past weekend?
I got a chance to fish 3 different days. Originally, my plan was to go up to Mille Lacs. And my wife and I had a cabin rented and we were going to fish up there at the Red Door Resort. And as 2020 would have it, hanging on to the last vestiges of joyfulness, one of my kids got sick. And he's fine now, but we ended up canceling the trip out of an abundance of caution to make sure he was okay. So I ended up staying home. So I did fish all 3 days, though. So not all was lost. I fished one day on Lake McBride, which is south of here. Didn't catch a darn thing. Ice was really sketchy from my perspective. I could not and did not feel comfortable trying to get where I wanted to get on the lake with respect to structure. I was using the spud bar the whole way, and there was a crust in some spots where slush was over the top. And boy, that's a pucker moment when you break through that crust, and you're like, yeah. Oh boy, you know, you're hoping.
And then you realize, kunk, oh good, yeah, there's something below the crust. You're hoping
there's another layer there. Yeah. But I was using the spud bar and got out and fished for a couple hours, and then it snowed and covered up all my tracks. So then I had to spud bar my way back off the lake, and so that was kind of a bust. But it was good to be out. It's good to
now. You're going to get in trouble, Jay. Are you using a spud bar or an ice chisel?
I'm using what I'm calling a spud bar, what Dave would call an ice chisel. Calling it a spud bar. So, potato, potato. And then I went the next day to, and these are, you know, there's only so many lakes in Iowa. So, I went to Brushy Creek over by Fort Dodge. And that's where I caught that nice bass I think I put up on Instagram and Facebook. And I had some decent fishing over there. There was a lot of people out. But it was a lot of fun. I wouldn't say there was huge fish. But I caught some perch, caught some walleyes, caught some panfish, caught some bass. So it was definitely worth the trip over there. And I just had a really nice time. It was busy, but wasn't loud. Like, it was pretty... People were pretty respectful and pretty much just fishing and having a good time. So I had a really nice time. And then on Sunday, I fished a local pond with a friend of mine and his son and a buddy of his kids. And we caught some panfish. And it was the first time I had ever used a camera. It was this weekend. Do you want me to talk about that a little bit, Jeff?
Yeah, we can go into camera. Yeah, we can. We got a couple. Maybe we should do a whole camera episode, probably, but we can do a brief on it.
Yeah, now. I'll do a brief on it. So the first time I've used a camera, the lakes I was on, McBride really didn't have a really good visibility, but it had some. Brushy Creek had plenty of visibility for the camera. And that was cool because you could put the camera. So Brushy Creek is an impound. And the name of it is fitting because it's all full of timber. So okay. There's trees sticking up through the whole thing. So you would just go by a tree, you'd stick your camera down or your flasher down, and you'd see what lived there.
So tons of structure.
Tons of structure. Structure upon structure. And so you'd put the camera down and you'd kind of look at the tree and see if there was fish hanging out. And it was pretty cool. It was cool to watch the fish move in and out of there. It was cool to watch for the first time for me, other than watching YouTube videos, like how the fish reacted to the bait and to the jigging, and then kind of their mannerisms. And then the fish, it's just cool because I've never done it before. So people that have probably used cameras for a while are like, well, yeah. but people that haven't may be interested in it. You know, for me, it was the first time I could really correlate. Here's what it looks like down here on the camera, and here's what it looks like on the flasher. You know, so it was pretty cool. So I found it very educational and entertaining. And I found myself, once the camera was dialed in and the fish, I was fishing at the right depth, I watched the camera way more than I ever watched the flasher. Because you could see when they sucked in the bait and you set the hook.
Right. I'm so excited cool. to see that thing in action.
It was a lot of fun. So I used, for bait, I used waxies and minnows. The bass I caught on a frosty spoon. Walleyes.
Yeah, frosty spoon. Yep.
Walleyes I caught on, I caught both of them on Widowmaker.
Slab Seeker?
Slab Seeker. Yep, I caught it on there with a minnow head on that. And then I caught another one, so two of them on, or one of them on there, and then one of them on a VCM spoon with a drop chain.
Ah, the drop chain. That's a new one that I've put into the arsenal. I like drop chains.
And then panfish were on a tungsten Wonder Bread.
Okay.
And they absolutely loved the jigging over not jigging this weekend.
Interesting.
Yeah, everything I caught was on moving stuff. They didn't want anything to do with, and actually both lakes, they all wanted stuff moving. So, yeah, that's my fishing report. It's nice to have a fishing report. I'm so excited.
It is great. It's great to have a fishing report. So I have two, and we'll go through them briefly. Minnetonka. I fished Minnetonka, and I went out there. It was about a... I fished it with my brother, actually. Tried out the new 24-volt StrikeMaster, too. We went out to a normal spot we go to in Minnetonka. It's probably... Because the ice out there, I don't have a wheeler or a snowmobile, and you could have had those out there, but... you could not drive out there. So I said it was a quarter mile walk to my brother. Mm-hmm. And when I looked on the phone, it was more like 3/4 of a mile of a walk to where okay. we fish. But, we walked down there and there's a few people there. So we got there about 2 o'clock, lots of fish on the thing, like Christmas tree, top to bottom, tons of fish.
Oh, wow.
But couldn't get them to bite. And my brother had to go. And then I stayed up through dark, and I caught about 30 crappies from, like, you know, probably half hour before dusk to an hour after dusk. They hit pretty good. And I was using, they did not want anything big, so I was using a wax worm or okay. waxy with a tungsten jig. And they were biting, I was in about 16 feet of water, but they were biting at like 9 feet. Like the fish that were at 15 feet of water wouldn't look at your jig. You had to jig above them at like 9 feet and they'd go after it.
That's cool.
Yeah. And it was cool because you could see some of them were moving fast enough where you'd see them move on your flasher. A camera would have been really cool because you'd see them like whoosh, and come up and whack your lure. And then sometimes they just gum it, right? Where they grab on and you'd only could tell that your line was a little loose. So
see, I don't know that the camera would have helped. I mean, the camera, you really have to have, with the one I have, anyway, mm-hmm. you'd have to be pretty dialed into the depth.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, horizontally, you have a pretty yep. good view.
Yep.
But vertically, you don't have,
mm-hmm.
depending on clarity. Now, you can rig that to look straight down, yep. which I haven't done yet. Maybe that would... give you a wider angle down. I haven't thought. I have to try that out sometime when in fish are in a column.
And Minnetonka is probably not the best lake for that because it's not super clear. But
yeah.
But then the next 2 days later, I went up to Mille Lacs, up to my usual Red Door spot there. The ice is not super great there. You can have wheelers and side by sides, but my wheelhouse, no trucks out there. It's still not quite ready. You can see the ice report, but they had some ice blow out in front of their place a few weeks ago, and you know it's recovered now, but it's still thinner there than it is in the rest of the lake, so you can't drive out yet. I think they're going to open it up soon. But I went out there, so for an evening and a morning bite. During the day, the fish just weren't really interested in biting. I left about 10 a.m. when I left, and you know I hadn't got a fish for an hour. But I caught about 10 walleyes, biggest one was 23, a little over 23, just outside of the slot. And pretty good fishing. I mean, they weren't crazy, but man, in the morning, because I got up for a sunrise, Jay. I was up
at sunrise. I'm good for you.
I know. So
kind of late, there was, but we'll say good enough.
So there was one time I'm like, man, they're going to start hitting. I caught that 23. I literally dropped my lure back in the and hit it again and got another one. There wasn't a 23 the next
one. What were you using for the walleye?
So I was using, this is back to my bobber thing. I tried drop chains. I tried rattle spoons. I tried, you know, I threw the tackle box at them. Dead stick with a bobber and a red hook. And a, you know, that's what it was.
You and know, that just, has produced so many fish, that type of a setup for me over the years. All the fancy nonsense, and then at the end of the day, a red hook and a bobber.
Yep, and you would just let it sit. You wouldn't touch it. You'd just like, you'd wait for your bobber to go under, and you'd hit them, right? And I actually lost as many as I got in. I don't know why I was having such a problem with getting my fish in, but I told a guy next to me, he's like, how did you do? I'm like, well, I just missed an eel pout. He's like, you only call him eel pout when you miss him.
That's one way to look at it.
Yeah. So the fishing was pretty good. I mean, I would say better than I've seen it this fall when it was pretty slow up there. It was pretty good. I mean, for me, 10 walleyes and, you know, 2-4 hour outings is pretty decent. So
yeah. Yeah, that's good. You've had a good season so far.
Yeah, it's a good lake right now. I would recommend people going there if you want to catch some fish. So,
and you won't be lonely.
You won't be lonely. This is true, and especially when the ice conditions, you can't like spread out all over the lake. But yeah. There's still plenty of space up there. I mean, you know, it's the second biggest lake in Minnesota. So
yeah,
it's pretty big.
What's the biggest lake in Minnesota?
Upper and Lower Red.
Okay.
So yeah, I hit two of the top 10 lakes this weekend, Minnetonka and Mille Lacs. So
must be nice.
I know. Yeah, we're a little spoiled. I know.
A little.
You're getting up here, Jay.
Tell me about it.
All right. So I think that's our fishing report. Bobber, red hook, Mille Lacs, waxy on Minnetonka, and sounds like frosty spoon.
Yep.
And tungsten jig in Iowa.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we're ready to move on to our guest today, Jay. I don't know if you want to do an introduction for us.
Yeah, I will. I'd love to. So we're going to interview today Timmy Hall, who we met through the show, actually last year, Jeff, beginning of the year.
Yep.
And Timmy is a custom rod maker out of Pennsylvania area. And he sent us a couple rods to try out. And I'd say we've been trying them out. And we've really enjoyed using them. He did a really nice job making them. And so we thought we would, well, in full disclosure, every time we talk about him, we forget the guy's name. And that's terrible of us. So I thought, how do we make this up? And how do we make it up for him and help us out in the same time? And so I thought, well, let's interview him. And so I asked him if he'd be on the show, and he agreed. And so he's up next. And so I hope you guys enjoy the interview. Take a listen. All right. So tonight we're here with Timmy Hall, who is a custom rod maker that we met through the show here a couple, 2 years ago. Timmy, was it
last year?
Last year? Time goes both fast and slow. And he sent us these two ice fishing rods to try out. And so we have been using them now for a little over a year. And we decided to have him on the show for a couple of reasons. Number one, we kept forgetting his name, even though he's awesome. And number two, because he made really good rods. And we've enjoyed using them. So we want to talk about his knowledge on rods and learn everything we can learn.
Yeah, because I kept on using these rods, Jay, and I'd be like, oh, this is a good rod, you know? So I've used it a lot. It's almost getting to be my go-to rod these days.
And that says a lot for Jeff.
Yeah. No, I think it kind of went against the grain of how I would picture ice fishing rods because, you know, there's this trend to have them really long, And then there's, you know, kind of a trend to have them kind of noodly. And I didn't have one like that. And I was maybe resisting that a little bit. Now that I've tried one, I really like it. So
cool. I can't remember how long they were.
You know, I actually don't know how long it is, but I know my shorter ones are like 26 and it's longer than that.
I think they're 36.
Is it 36? Okay.
I'd have to, we'll put a tape on it.
Yeah, I know they were pretty long because that was what prompted me to get a hold of you. You had just talked about everybody talking about long rods and what the fascination with them was.
Good. Right. And I kind of was pushing on that, but I kind of like it. I mean, at some point I don't need a 6-foot ice fishing rod, but the longer one, I've gotten more used to it. I've gotten more used to it now. I like it.
So how did you first get started making fishing rods? How long have you been doing it? What prompted you to get into the business?
I've been probably about 3 years now. And what prompted me was I'm just cheap. And I thought it would be cheaper to build my own. And it's not. So
yeah, probably not. Yeah.
But it was just that I just wanted to do it. We don't live anything we would have to buy. You almost have to order it. There's nothing super close. And when you go there, they don't have a good selection. And I couldn't pull the trigger on some of those real expensive rods. So I figured the next best thing was just to build them myself.
So how'd you go about learning how to do it? Did you read a book, take a class, Google it, YouTube?
There was a little pamphlet with the package and it told you how to do it. I watched, I don't know, a couple videos, but not too many. It's not a real complicated process. And so it picked it up pretty quick.
But okay.
I think it's more like just creative. What the basics are the basics. And then after that, it's how pretty you can make them look.
Okay. So when you're putting a rod together, how do you match everything up? Like, how do you decide, okay, I want one this long. I'm going to put this guy, these guides. This is how far apart they are. How do you decide all that?
If you're real lucky, you'll get somebody when they order the rod and they tell you exactly what they want. But otherwise, with ice rods, it's a little harder when you set the guide spacing. It's pretty much so the rod will bend evenly. There isn't any kind of flat spots. If, say, the guides were too far apart, there'd be kind of a flat spot in the rod when the line's bent completely over. So you kind of just move them around and keep fiddling with that to get the best spacing. Length, it depends on, whatever they want. Like if they sit far away from the hole, how big your hut is, if they're fishing outside all the time, maybe what they're fishing for. They want a little longer or shorter, stuff like that. So, and the grip, that could be anything. There's just cork. There's, EVA, ones that you could screw the reel right on, ones that I use those Velcro strips. They got those bands, so it could just be solid cork, split grip, just whatever somebody, it kind of depends on what the person wants. So, if I have to guess, I just mix and match and make stuff and then hope somebody wants it.
And you actually brought up a question Jeff had about the best way to put the reel on.
Oh man, I don't know. I hate those bungees. I hate those rubber bands.
So I'm fully on board with that because we actually, Jason and I both got those when we got those rods. He actually bought them for me. And for the first like couple times I used it, that's all I had on there. And when I get a fish, you could actually, I felt like I had to hold the reel on because it would like stretch and bend it. And it flexes
on there.
Yeah.
That's horrible. I hate that. I hate that feeling when those bands flex. That's why I use the Velcro. I hate tape because when you peel it off, it tears the cork up. And if you paid more than $15 for your rod from the box store, you don't want to peel the cork off. And a lot of the ones that screw on like your regular summertime rod where they would, lock in there, they're not that comfortable. I don't think on the ice. I all that plastic and stuff. So I like straight cork. But I heard the other day somebody, they must use those bands when they like castrate a calf or something.
Yep.
They get those because they're even Or maybe I heard it on your show. I don't remember.
Yeah, that's what they're the castration bands is what they are.
Right.
Just yeah. Don't let your wife find those.
God no.
Yeah, so I actually maybe, you know, I put some tape on mine and now I'm feeling kind of bad about it, but I think I'll have to check out these Velcro strips because I knew that the bands weren't good enough because I had been catching some fish and I felt like my reel was going to fly down the hole or something. It wasn't great. So I did put some tape on and that really made it solid, but I know it was going to hurt it a little bit. So I'll have to check out those Velcro ones that you talked about.
Yeah, I mean, you know, tape is the go-to for, I think a lot of people wind up taping them on anyway, so.
I did hear a tip. Somebody, our friend Ole, that's on the show a lot, he actually tapes the rod once on the rod, and then he tapes over the reel so that if you have to remove and add the tape again, you don't tear up the rod. Like, you only have one spot where the tape is instead of two, so.
Oh, got ya.
So you're always going to have that one wrap, but you can wrap your other one around it. So if you have to take it on and off, it doesn't ruin it more. So
that's right. Such an Ole thing.
Oh, it's definitely an Ole thing.
Interesting guy. Listen, when I listen, he's interesting.
We're going to have to delete that part because it'll go to his head.
Or not, and just let it go to his head. We got to have something to make fun of him for. So
how about the rod guides? How do you have a type of guide? I know so little about this. So I don't know if there's like style of guides, types of guides, composition of guides, or you just order guides on Amazon.
No, all of those. There's the same ones you could use on your regular long rod summertime, you know, with a steel with an insert in it, you know, whatever. And then the guides that I've been using are on your rods, I believe. They're actually fly rod guides.
Okay.
So they're just a wire steel plated ones. They got some really expensive ones that can flex when they're cold. They're recoil ones, and you can bend those right over flat, but they're kind of pricey. So somebody would really have to, you know, want those specifically. But I usually go with fly guides because they're easy to, you know, if they ice up a little, they're easy to clean. They're mm-hmm. not too expensive. Mm-hmm. You can get them pretty big. So when they do ice up, they clean right out. So that's what I go with. But basically,
that's one thing I've noticed with the reels. I've had rods before where, even for ice fishing, if the holes are too, you know, the guides are so small that when you fish outside, you know, you're constantly getting stuck in those. And I did notice that the ones on the rod you gave us were a little bigger, which was nice. I mean, it still gets frozen up from time to time. I mean, eventually that gets filled, but I do like having those bigger guides where the ice can freeze up and easier to crack off of there.
Yeah. I think they warm up a little quick too if you put your fingers on them. Because it's just a wire instead of the band with the insert. Mm-hmm. So, but that's just speculation.
Well,
we could do some scientific tests. We
could test it. Jeff could dunk rods in the water, let it freeze, and then warm it with his thumb and time.
And time it.
I do it all the time. That sounds like fun. But I do use my thumb to warm them up. I have used that technique, in fact, this weekend. When you're fishing outside and, you know, the guides get full of ice, you hold your thumb on there for a few minutes and it melts it off and you can fish on. It does work.
Yeah.
Better than your lighter.
Yeah, lighter.
Then the guides fall right off.
Yeah.
So how about like the type of composition of the rod itself? So like graphite or fiberglass or plastic. I don't know. What kind of rod do you prefer for ice fishing rods, composition wise?
I think the rods that I'm running right now, all of them are solid fiberglass. I like the way they flex. You know, I like super noodly tips. I'm going for panfish around here. There's no walleye lakes around here. You got to drive to get to those.
I know.
So I like solid fiberglass.
Okay. Very cool. So for panfish, a solid fiberglass rod is your go-to.
That's my go-to. Yeah. As far as graphite, they and the combo combination kind of graphite and something else. I can't think of it. I'm drawing a blank, but they all, you can get them all in like real noodly tips, real stiff. So it goes weight wise, whatever you're fishing, whatever you're going after, you could get a fiberglass in a heavier weight or a graphite in a heavier weight. So it really wouldn't matter. I think people have specifics. They say, you know, like guidelines, but I don't know. I don't really follow that. I mean, if it feels good to me, I haven't broke any of my ice rods yet. I've been trying. I've been fooling around. Last time we were fishing, I was holding that thing straight up vertical on every fish I could get till it bent over and hit my elbow. The tip was coming right down to like my forearm, and I was yelling and hooting and hollering and stuff, and I still couldn't break any of them. So,
okay.
I actually just did go. Fun. Yeah, I actually did. I don't usually go that extreme, but this is quite some time ago. I actually went to fiberglass for the same reason, because I've broke a few rods, and I found that the fiberglass ones are much more durable, and that I am not as careful as I need to be for rods that aren't fiberglass. So my rods I have, yours and the other ones I have, are actually fiberglass ones. And I have noticed they are much more durable than the graphite ones.
Yeah. Yeah. I think maybe graphite has a little more sensitivity running through it. Like maybe you can feel the bite detection a little bit better because they got that. It's just that material composition. So
very cool. So if somebody was, I'm going off script just a little bit on this question. If someone was gonna ask somebody to build a rod for them or buy a rod from a custom rod guy like yourself, what are some things they should ask about or know or want, should figure out before they ask for the rod to be built?
I guess if you've never bought one from that particular guy, I think the only thing you can really do is ask for a bunch of pictures, look at his history. And then if you're not sure how you want it built, and you leave it up to him, then that's always, kind of get what you're going to get. But the best you can do is look at pictures, and then of course ask him what materials he normally uses or what he's going to use, because anything I buy, you guys, everybody can just go online and look at the same exact stuff. So there's no hidden place where I can get my rod building supplies that I know of. I mean, there's some things like three or four big companies, a lot of companies make their own blanks. Mm-hmm. But you know, so whatever I was going to build it for you, if I told you, you told me what you wanted, and then I told you what it was, and you could just go right online and look to see, you know, and look at reviews and, you know, how it performed, mm-hmm. and maybe change your mind. So I think, you know, asking like for pictures and maybe what materials he's going to use, and then go on and do a little search if you're not sure. If you know what you want, it's a lot easier, obviously, but I think those are the two best things.
How long does it take you to put a rod together, start to finish?
An ice rod, probably 2 days, because I'm kind of slow. And a fly rod, if I was just doing a basic, it might take 4 or 5 days. If I have to do like ice rods, it's hard on anything bigger. I can do a weave pattern on it, like a cross wrap, or weave your name on it or something like that. Then it takes a bunch more time. You know, it could take 2 weeks. So, but I mean, I don't, that's only my time. Some rod makers are, God, there's some beautiful, even ice rods. There's guys that I look on Facebook, I don't even know how they can do the patterns on there because the rods are so small, and they do a weave pattern on there with thread and back and forth and different colors, and it's just mind boggling. So,
but you know, speaking of patterns on our rods, you you were able to burn our logo onto the handle.
How right. Yeah. A laser engraver, a small one. I swiped the image off your web page or Facebook. I'm not sure. And then saved it and made it smaller and bigger and moved it around. But it's just a basic laser engraver. I was trying to do some stuff. I did a couple things that last year with it. I haven't been too big. I haven't done too many ice rods this year, but last year I had done a bunch. So I did that, the Hard Water Show. And I did one for a kid up in Wisconsin. And I had like a Green Bay Packers thing. It said Go Pack Go on there. And on the end, it was like the Green Bay logo.
Uh-oh. Cool. Uh-oh.
Jeff's a Vikings guy.
That's okay. I'm a Cowboys fan.
Hey.
We all have our problems. We don't have a sports team, so we go wherever we want.
Jason just is a Packers fan out of spite, so he's not a Vikings fan.
I am, yeah. I used to. I did send your kid a Packers sweatshirt once.
Yes, you did. Yeah, you did that. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, let's see.
I would say, I was going to say about the customization. I think that's the coolest part that I like. Two things, that rod. One, I really have enjoyed using it this year and part of last year too. But, it has our logo on it, and it's, you're not going to go to the store and find another one like that. It's maybe Jason has one and I have one, so there's two. But it's unique. You're not going to be like, is this your rod or my rod, right? Like, you know exactly whose it is. So I do like that part.
Oh yeah. It's nice to be able to build it out of good components and be able to customize it length or the cork on it or the color of the, tie the guides on, whatever it is, and have, a good rod that nobody's going to have. I tried to make triplets in the spring, and even that they're just a little different, right. They're all three are exactly the same rod and blank and grip, but just trying to get them all. But they had there was marbling on the end. And of course that's a little different. So even though they're triplets, they're still slightly different.
That's cool. Anything else on ice fishing rods? Otherwise we're going to wander down a different path and just talk ice fishing for a minute.
Not really. Pretty basic.
No, that's cool. I really appreciate it. I now know more than I did 15 minutes ago. So that's now whether I'll retain it 15 minutes from now is a whole separate question.
Well, what I know is I told Jason this before, is I've started to make that my go-to rod. I keep about 5 rods with me usually when I'm fishing, but I always gravitate to that one, and I've been using that one. And I will say, I've caught a fair amount of walleyes on that, and it does work very well for walleyes too. So
nice.
Well, the size are somewhat comparable to Panda.
23 inches. That was the biggest one on Sunday. Was 23 inches. That's not a bad one.
That's all right. That's healthy.
That's a good one. That's a monster for here.
Yeah.
So what do you like to fish for? What's your favorite ice fishing fish?
Perch.
Do you have a lure or go-to presentation you use?
No, I mean, this year I've been trying to fish all plastic. So, I've been having pretty good luck with just horizontal, just a tungsten, teardrop or just a straight ball, horizontal. And I got some plastics, couple little BBs with a little squiggly tail on it. I don't think they have a name, or they maybe have a name. I'm not sure, but that's what I've been going with this year. So
I need to get into those. I have not yet broached those. I'm always like,
leap of faith.
I know. I know.
It's tough. It's tough to go do it because it's in my mind. I was like, I'm never going to catch them. It's not going to catch any bluegill. I'm not going to catch any perch, nothing. And this year I said, I'm going with it. And I've been having great luck. So I don't know.
It is a leap of faith. My brother-in-law fishes almost primarily open water with plastics, right? For walleye. And so when I started fishing with him years ago, I'm like, where's your bait? And he like points at the jig body. He's like, that's the jig body. That's the bait. I'm like, no, that's a plastic. It's not the bait. Where's your bait? And the knothead catches, he outfishes me. I hate to admit it on a lot of occasions, but
we can edit that part out, Jason.
Yeah. Well, no, I admit it to him. In Iowa, he outfishes me. In Minnesota, so far I outfish him for now. So because I had bait. Iowa walleyes don't mind plastic, but Minnesota walleyes like bait. That's my opinion.
I have not ventured. We actually got a question from a listener recently about plastics, and Jason and I both were like, man, it's not something either one of us really do, and maybe it's something we should do more, but it's just, you got to get used to it.
Yeah.
You gotta give it a try. At least rig up one. If you're carrying five rods, rig up one of them with some plastic. Just cut the, I don't know. Well, if you're not running plastics during the summer, you could always cut the little danglies off a tube jig. So you don't have to buy anything and just put one of those little stringers on there. Well, if that works.
Jeff's going to try it and report back.
Yep. Hopefully.
I'm not ready to give up bait.
I'll try it.
Don't give it up. Don't give it up. He's got five rods. One of them can have plastic.
Yeah.
You can only fish with two though, right, Jeff? Minnesota's two.
Right, but I have five rods because four is probably, but I have them rigged up all differently so you can, so you don't have to retie all the time. You put one away, you try another one, put one away, try another one.
Right.
So, yeah, I tied on two pound tests the other
rotate
day.
Through them.
Yeah. And then eventually I start tying things on. But yeah, I like to have a few so you can maximize your fishing time and a little less tying time when you're out on the ice.
Yeah. So how long have you been ice fishing? When did you start ice fishing?
I didn't start until I was about 27, 28.
Okay.
And only for a couple of years. And then I started back up again, maybe 5 years ago.
Okay.
So
do you have one thing we always do in the show, and I'm putting you on the spot, is, we share the legend, right? The favorite ice fishing legend. Do you have a legend for us tonight?
Sure. Am I the legend or is somebody else the legend?
You are the legend and you're telling a legend.
Okay. So I give you one. I wanted to do my own ice fishing derby. So I sent out messages to all my friends, and it was invite only. And it's a state lake. We met there and there was probably about 25 guys get on the ice, and I had made up these playing cards. So if you drew, it was two man teams. So if you drew a pair, you got to fish for free, and whatever the money was, it was 100% payout to first place. But it wasn't advertised, and got on the ice early, and it was like glass that day. Just there was no snow. You could have skated the whole lake, and it's like maybe 80 acres, something like that. Maybe 2 hours in, I got a text message. Hey, the DEC is looking for you. Or DEP, whatever. Not DEP. The game warden. I said, okay. And I was like across the lake because I was visiting with everybody. So then I went back to my hut and they're like, oh, he was already here and he left. And somebody, said that you're having a tournament. I said, well, I'm not having a tournament. It's just we're together.
Right.
So then I went over to the other side of the lake to talk to somebody, and I got there and they're like, hey, the game warden was just here and he's looking for you. I said, okay. Well, this went on for about an hour. I went off the lake to get my wife, who was there to, visit. And it was so slippery. I took one of my ice cleats off and I put it on her. And so we each had one, and we're walking back on the ice, and there's one guy with no equipment walking straight at me. And of course it was the game warden. And he's like, hey, are you Tim Hall? I said, yep. He's like, I've been looking for you. And this had been hours. He must have went over that entire lake looking for me. And it was slippery. And he's like, you know, let me see your driver's license. I said, okay, here it is. And he's like, you know, you need a permit to have a tournament. And I said, I'm not having a tournament. We're just together. He goes, I saw that playing card with your name on it. I said, well, I'm not going to argue with you. He's like, okay, well, you're going to get the fine in the mail. It's $750. Ooh. And then he says, yeah. And he goes, you know, you can download that permit to use this lake and it's free. Oh. And I said, I didn't know that. Yes. So he went off the lake and he goes, oh, and I'm going to do you a favor. You can finish your tournament. I said, okay. So he left, sat in the parking lot the whole time. Everybody came off the lake. First place guy had like, I don't know what the perch was, like 13, 14 inch perch one. I gave him like underneath my coat. I give him the money.
Yeah.
And then everybody left. And my wife goes, did anybody offer to give you any money to pay for that ticket? I said, nope. Everybody just split. They all left. So, but the guy was nice. He was just busting my chops and he never sent me the thing in the mail. So I didn't have to pay. But
now every year
I still do the tournament. This will be our third year for the tournament and I get the permit now. Yeah. So
that's a great story. Thanks for sharing.
If you're gonna host a tournament. Yeah. You're welcome. If you're gonna host a tournament, make sure you check on all those darn rules.
Yeah, that's cool. That's really cool. It's a great story. Thanks very much for sharing that with us, Timmy. And I really appreciate you sharing all your information and knowledge with us and all the effort you put into the rods that we use. We really appreciate it. So if folks want to get a hold of you, we talked about the best way to get a hold of you is Instagram, and your handle is Timmy_MF_Hall on Instagram. And we'll tag you in the show too, when this one comes out, so that people can find you off of our post as well.
Great. Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Well, thank you very much. If you want to drop Timmy a line to ask him about rods, you can reach him on his Instagram at Timmy_MF, as in Michael Franklin, _Hall. So Timmy_MF_Hall. And we really want to thank him for being on the show and his dedication to the ice fishing sport. Heck of a nice guy. And it was really nice actually getting to meet him virtually, of course. But it was a good time.
It was great. Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Well, Jeff, I think it's that time.
It is. I know. It was a great show. We talked about fishing and gear. And, you know, we got a legend from Timmy. So it was a great time.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening. Until next time, tight lines.
Cheers.
Five. You've been listening to the Hard Water Fishing Show with Jeff and Jason.
Say goodbye.
One of the most unique podcasts on the planet, where we talk about tactics, gear, and ice fishing legends. We'll be back soon.
Bye-bye.
Till then, signing off.
Bye-bye. 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 Bye-bye.